Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Jaeger CPA Review and More. This podcast is sponsored by Jaeger CPA Review, the course provider that deals only with the AICPA blueprints. Please go to the JaegerCPAReview.com website and look at our various products. And we believe in seeing is believing. And therefore, please look at our 3-day free trial. Pick a subject, and it'll give you 3 days free access, unlimited, to that product. And I believe that once you look at that product and see how it works, you will pick Jaeger CPA Review as your course provider. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 301-874-4900. If you press 5, you may even talk to Phil Jaeger. Take care, everyone, on your journey for the CPA exam. We wish you the best and good luck.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Jaeger CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at JaegerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Jaeger.
Hello, everyone. It's Phil Jaeger here, and welcome to CPA Review and More. And usually most of these, you know, podcasts are more, all right? We don't keep talking about the CPA exam, all right? We don't want to be the cure for insomnia, all right, and put you to sleep. So today, and by the way, as I said, we scan the globe looking for the best people, all right? And you know what? We found the globe, and under the globe, no, we found a very, I don't book the guests, actually. I have someone, but he's been doing it for 2 years, and, you know, he gets me some real nice people, and I enjoy talking to him. I learned stuff, and I hope you will learn stuff. Our guest today is Arthur Garcia, all right? Arthur is a tech leader. I'm just going to read this, Arthur, from your LinkedIn thing. Co-founder of COO Somas, co-founder of Katavi Alliance. And by the way, all right, I love this group. They've never invited me to be part of it. He's part of the accounting top 20 under 40. All right. Now, the reason they told me I wasn't invited to join is because I'm over 40. All right. All right. Now, so I said, hey, start one 40 to 60 or something like that. I'd be the first member and I'd start recruiting people. Okay. All right. But I haven't heard back. Ooh, what's that? Who's the, is that a like accounting today or?
It's a CPA, it was CPA practice advisor. But as you well know, there's been some consolidation. So the CPA practice advisor was acquired recently.
And do they still have the top 20 under 40?
Yeah, I believe so. But as you alluded to, I think I no longer qualify for that.
You're not 40, are you? Are you over 40 or 40 or over?
Yeah. This is my year. I mean, I know.
Arthur, you look so young. I don't know what to say. You know,
it's the cucumbers, Phil. It's the cucumbers.
And you're married. It's the marriage. How long have you been married?
Almost 15 years.
Wow. So you got married when you were what? 10 years old? 10? All right. And children? You have children?
I do. I've got 3 children. My oldest is turning 10 next week. My daughter is 8 and my youngest son is 6 years old. So,
well, as we say, God bless you with that. That's unbelievable. Okay. You love children? Do you love children?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's terrific. I'm going to show you how old I am. I only have 1 daughter and she just turned 50.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's convinced that her next thing is to an assisted living center. Mm. So, she starts work. God, I just turned 50. I'm old. I don't know how many years I have left. This is what I listen to. All right. And I have 2 grandchildren.
Okay.
And one started the University of Alabama this year.
Oh, excellent.
And they have a very good football team.
I've heard about that school, you know, once or twice. But yes, they do have an excellent football team.
Excellent. And actually, Arthur lived in Colorado. I was just discussing that with him because I lived in Denver for a while. All right. And the people there, I don't know how they are today, but all they talked about And actually, the city came to a halt. I said, this is my New York accent. City came to a halt when there was a Broncos game. Do you remember that? Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Even a preseason game, they all, you know, everything stopped.
Yes.
And, you know, we were trying to sell our house, and the realtor had someone to look at it. And the realtor said, I'm sorry, it's 5 o'clock and we're going to a preseason game. We'll come over tomorrow with the person. And I said, what kind of real estate agent do you, you know? But anyway. So anyway, Arthur, tell us about yourself personally. You do exactly what? Tell us what you do and how you, by the way, did you work, you came out of school and did you work for a CPA firm initially?
I did not, but one of my first jobs working in the family business was doing the bookkeeping and payroll for my family's restaurant when I was growing up in Denver. So we had a Mexican restaurant for 12 years, and I helped the family business operate. So I mean, flash forward, it's essentially what I'm doing now as an operator for a startup as a co-founder. But yeah, I mean, you know, once I left school, I started working in the on the vendor side at Paychex. So I, you know, got my start in sales there, working with accountants, with financial institutions and small businesses. And that really teed me up after 6 years in leading a team there for my role at Xero, where I helped build the initial sales team and really helped kind of structure our go-to-market and accounting channels. So I mean, if you can picture back in 2013, Xero was, you know, brand new to the U.S. market. And there was about 10, 12 of us in the South market here in San Francisco figuring out how we were going to take on, you know, the big competitor and how we were going to establish ourselves in the country. So those were definitely amazing times in my career with, you know, how we took something that was new, innovative, and kind of disrupted a lot of what, you know, what was standard in the accounting profession. So, you know, that kind of led to, you know, just a love and passion for helping small businesses, consulting accounting firms. And, you know, after 6 years, I decided, you know what, I think I can do this. So I left and I joined a national franchisor and called ATAX. And we had about 45 offices that were offering tax, accounting, bookkeeping services, payroll, and did that for a couple years. And then we actually exited. So that company was acquired by John Hewitt of Loyalty Brands, a name you might be familiar with, the founder of Liberty Tax and Jackson Hewitt. And so then I was kind of left looking for the next opportunity. But before that, I really connected with accounting professionals across the Americas, and with a few former colleagues of mine, we launched the Contabi Alliance with a focus on building a community of bilingual Spanish-speaking accounting professionals in the U.S., Canada, all the way down to Argentina. And so building community, sharing best practices. And so we've now grown to about 75 member firms in 15 countries. And so that keeps me very well connected to the profession and working with different partners. But one of the new projects is Somos Ancestria. And what really allowed me to be a part of that project was my knowledge of starting a business in the US, navigating compliance and getting everything set up. So my co-founders were based in Mexico and they were looking for someone to help them launch in the US. And what Somos is, it's the first direct-to-consumer ancestry service for the native and Latino communities. So the problem that we're trying to solve there is when you take a look at all of the data that's available for scientific research and drug discovery, 1.2% is represented by the Latino population. So obviously that's a problem. And also 1% of clinical trials comes from that community. So that's a focus there. We sell e-commerce, a kit like this. User provides a saliva stamp.
That is very, what is that now? Is that a first aid kit? What is it?
This is a DNA saliva kit. So
hey, was I close?
You were close.
Wait a minute, can I spit in that box and you can give me a DNA of myself?
Yeah, actually, there's a tube in there, and you provide a saliva sample, and we're able to provide you with a report that gives you percent of global ancestry as well as indigenous to the Americas. So we're able to provide you a breakdown of your ancestral roots, and then in the future, some health insights, some genetic counseling, et cetera, all for the purpose of accelerating the discovery of tailored medicine. So that's kind of how I pivoted from accounting to, you know, you could call it biotech, but essentially health tech is what we're doing. But I wouldn't be able to be in the role that I am today as an operator without having that core foundation of accounting and finance that I've learned throughout my career, and being able to build a network of accounting professionals has really helped.
Your major was accounting in school, right?
Well, my major was business, but yes, marketing and accounting. And I think, you know, you raise a good point. You know, what am I doing on this show here? You know, I'm not a CPA.
Well, do you have talent? I'm going to make you play an instrument, you know, because America's got talent in San Francisco. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes, I built my career in really working to help accounting professionals along the way with the transformation of their practices. So I've had the opportunity to connect with many firms from Big Four, small regional firms, and really have a pulse of the industry, if you will, from the vendor side in the new advancements of technology, but also how firms operate, how they work, the war for talent. We were talking about this earlier, is, you know, how do accounting firms find the talent that they need to continue to grow and offer these services that are beyond compliance, but also services and value-added services that maybe are, you know, you don't learn while you're studying accounting.
No, I don't think you really, you don't learn the real world there. And I found, like, for example, they taught consolidations in college. I had an advanced accounting, and I did not understand the thing that person was talking about. All right. Now, of course, the person who taught it was a doctorate, and he never worked in accounting. All right. So he was teaching me strictly from the book. But, you know, I think you'll have to agree. You learn, all right, when you start working, all right, and then you can see the real picture. I think that's really the case.
Absolutely. Not, you know, when I started, you know, I didn't work in a firm, but, you know, I've always had a strong student mentality. You know, if we were going to be positioning our products or our services to the accounting profession, I had to take that ownership and learn the vocabulary, right? I had to know the difference between a compilation, a review, and an audit. And I needed to know how a firm operated. What were the processes and what were the procedures and, you know, how they billed for their time? You know, my opinion is accounting professionals make money in three ways. Number one, for their time, based on their experience. Number two, and then three, their expertise. So, you know, I don't know if you agree with those three, but I think, you know, as a young accounting professional, those are the three areas that I would focus. Well, if I'm brand new, I don't have the experience yet, so I've got to go find it. You know, where can I go? Is it building a niche practice? It's focused on a specific industry. Is that how I want to differentiate myself? So those were the types of things and areas that I would look at when working with firms and how they were positioning themselves in the market to grow.
I don't believe an accountant, CPA, whatever, all right, can actually make a good living by charging on an hourly basis.
Right.
Okay? All right. I think you have to be paid for your value.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the first thing when you go in and try to get a client, all right, they say, how much do you charge? And if you say to them, well, I don't charge by the hour. I charge by the value of my services. All right. The problem is, at the time I was in Denver, there was so many non-CPAs, all right? There was mobile accounting services, all right? Charging $75 a month to come in there and give them financial statements, payroll, all right? And, you know, a lot of the small businesses went with that instead of a CPA, and they didn't know the value. Actually, I don't think they knew what a CPA does.
Right.
I blame that on the our professionals, societies, whatever, all right? You need to show, hey, yes, mobile is strictly, hey, you want a financial statement? That's great. Anybody can do that today. But the question is, can they look at that statement and tell you and give you advice on what you're doing or not doing, all right? I don't think actually anybody could have worked for them or started that franchise. So I think people really need to know what a CPA is, all right, and what he does.
Right, and, absolutely.
And I think that's what lacking. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're talking about the value that's perceived by the customer. And so I think that's definitely an opportunity for accounting firms to better present their engagements and what's included and what's that peace of mind that they have with working with the firm beyond the compliance side. But I think when we're talking about value of the firm, I think that's also might be something that's affecting the number of folks sitting for the CPA exam, right? Like, how much do they value that? You know, if vendors are promoting to students or bookkeepers that, you know, all you need to start an accounting firm is a laptop and download and start using one of the platforms, major platforms for accounting, then you have what you need. So why sit for the CPA exam? Why spend that time, invest that money? So, I mean, you know the numbers well, Phil, but, you know, one of the areas that I look at in working with the Contabi Alliance is the disparities, or I guess the lack of diversity in the profession, based on the AICPA stats that were released. There are 6% of Latinos that are represented in CPA firms across in all positions. And then when you look at actual CPAs in the profession, this is based on the 2019 study, there's 4% of Latinos that are represented in that space. And then even smaller amount are partners. So 2%. So that's one of the areas that we work on at the Contabi Alliance, is how do we educate future generations? How do we build that value so that they are able to pursue a CPA, but also better serve the needs of the businesses that they're looking to serve?
Is a cost of attending college a reason, one of the reasons, for having such low percentages of Latinos in, you know, Big Four? Is this Big Four you're saying, that there's only 6% Latinos in Big Four?
No, that's in CPA firms. So this is done by the AICPA, a study that they did back in 2019. It's something that they do regularly.
Okay, and what are they doing about it? Anything?
Well, the change won't come overnight, but it's one thing to have to do the study and see what the numbers actually are. But then, you know, there's a number of things that need to happen. So a good friend of mine, Jessica Velasquez, who's a CPA with Indivia Advisors, is now on the AICPA National Commission for Diversity. Sometimes there's the belief that you cannot be what you cannot see. So if we see that there's only 2% of partners in CPA firms, then for someone that's studying accounting in undergrad, or if someone is, you know, deciding on what to study on, if they don't see people in the profession that look like them, then, you know, that could be something that, you know, doesn't motivate them or interest them, because they become lost in pursuing the full, you know, in going to the extent of getting their CPA. So I think there's some work that's being done, but there's definitely more to do. Having the conversation, and that's why I thank you for having this space and creating this space, is to be able to talk about it, right? Because we know that diversity means many different things. There's gender diversity, there's ethnic diversity, and so we can't attack it just with one lens of diversity in general. We actually have to peel back the layers and identify where those challenges are. So it's a really good report that the AICPA put out there. So if anybody's listening in the audience that wants to take a further look at that, they can definitely have a look at that report.
Well, I think it's great to have reports. The question is, I mean, you know, every large corporation, these not-for-profits, or like the AICPA, all right. Hey, at any one day, they're having meetings all day about things. Okay, all right. And I sometimes wonder, right? It's like let's keep ourselves busy. Let's have lunch. Let's discuss it. And you know what? I'll sign you to look at it and get us back some information on it, say in 6 months. All right. I wonder, you know, with all these meetings, some of these people are professional meters. They don't really get, all right, this 6%, that's pretty low, as you said, All right. And the question is, who is doing something about it? All right. You're only one person. Who else is doing something?
Well, that's a very good question. There's not enough folks doing it, but there is some work. You know, there's an organization out there called Alpha. It's the Association for Latino Professionals for America. It used to be called something different, focused on accounting. But there are organizations out there working with students at the undergrad level to get them prepared and get them exposure to some of these big firms. And not just the big four, but other firms. So there's work being done, but there, you know, that we need more, and we need more people that, again, that are representative of the community in these roles and in these positions to be able to share their stories, with others.
Yeah. I'm sure you know this, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. All right. We had tremendous, you know, migration of, you know, Jews, Eastern European Jews, all right, who came to the United States, and they all came to Ellis Island. And the one thing they had to show was, all right, that they could do a certain job, all right? Whether you're a plumber, all right, you do seamstress, you know, sewing, that type of thing. And, all right, if you couldn't do anything, they would just send you back. And, I don't know what the percentage, I don't know if they sent back that many, that I don't remember. But it was like these people, they were so appreciative, all right, because America is where they thought, you know, that was the land of milk and honey here. But, you know, it's so different today. There's so much politics, all right? They use diversity not to, you know, increase the number of people coming in who are Latinos, but they use it as a political tool. They bounce it back, you know? And, I don't agree with that. But I believe you do need more. There's a lot of good people.
All right? Yes.
That, you know, 6%.
There's
many other good people. All right. And they're complaining. We have a shortage of accountants. All right. What do they go to colleges, universities, and try to recruit there the people? What percentage of the people who are Latinos, all right, do go to college? You know the percentages on that?
Enrolled in college, I don't have the exact percentage, but, you know, that's part of the work also is getting more folks into college. But we know that those numbers are increasing. So I don't have that specific number. But beyond the accounting profession, it's also something on the tech side. As I mentioned, you know, I worked on the tech side of things, and Latinos represent 8% of all tech employees. So when you take a look at the representation of employees working at tech companies, and whether it's in customer service, customer experience, or even sales, again, there's a segment of the market that is ripe for, you know, for acquiring, right? So I just came back from a conference in San Diego, and, you know, the numbers are loud and clear that Latinos are starting new businesses at a faster rate than the non-Latino cohort, almost 34%. So if the economy is growing quickly in that area, in that segment, well, they're going to look for accounting professionals that look like them, that might be bilingual. And it doesn't have to be Spanish. I mean, the large majority of the 60 million Hispanics, Latinos in the U.S. are going to speak English. So it's just a matter of connecting with them culturally, but also there's a big need on the technology side with a lot of the vendors, and being able to mirror the customer and able to serve that market. So I see that as an opportunity for the accounting profession, is to hire with that intent for diversity and talent to meet the growing needs of the community, because, I mean, it's a reality. It's one of the fastest growing populations, and we're starting businesses a lot faster than non-Latino cohort overall.
What type of businesses are they starting?
Small businesses initially. So that's going to be from construction. It could be food services. It could be health. Stanford puts out a great report every single year. It's called The State of Latino Entrepreneurship.
Right.
I'm a graduate of the Stanford Latino Scaling Initiative. So it's research that's put on by Stanford, and they put out this this report that gives insights on the industries. And that's something I can share with you. You can put in the notes there, Phil, so that others can take a look at what are the actual numbers, where's the focus, what segments, what industries. So there's definitely a large group of small businesses. And when you take a look at scaled Latino businesses, only 3% of Latino businesses generate $1 million in revenue. And so this program at Stanford is focused on helping grow that cohort and to helping them scale from 1 million to 3 to 5, et cetera, by providing them with mentorship and access to capital partners to think of, you know, different ways of scaling their business. So there's a number of resources I can share with you on those statistics there. But I think when we look at the profession, it's definitely an area to look at. In making sure that they are mirroring the growing population, and also that they are going to be able to meet the needs of those services in those businesses.
How many? You don't know how many Latinos, or you said it's not all Latinos. But I think is that a bad term to say that everyone's a Latino? All right, what's the definition of a Latino?
Sure. Thank you for that question. And so that's kind of part of the work that I'm doing on Somos, is kind of breaking down, you know, the reality in the U.S., there's 60 million Latinos, and some of them are going to identify as Hispanic. Some in the group are going to reject that term. Some are going to identify as Latinx. You've heard a lot of politicians and start to reference Latinx, and some are going to identify differently. So when we use the term Latino, I mean, we just have to know that not everybody is going to receive that, but we're talking about origins from Latin America, right? And we know that across the Americas, there's North America, which includes Canada, U.S. and Mexico is part of North America. We know that Central America starts in Guatemala and below, and then there's South America. So that's an excellent question that you're asking there. So among that 60 million, individuals are going to identify differently. But generally, when you use the word Latino, it's defining a group of that origin. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Is that helpful?
Are the big accounting firms, including the big four, all right, are they discriminating in any way against Latinos as far as hiring practices that you're aware of?
You know, not that I'm aware of, Phil. And it's really about, you know, as I mentioned, the numbers get smaller when you go from Latinos in the accounting profession, then it's CPAs, and then it's partners, right? So somewhere in there, you know, there needs to be, you know, promotions, or needs to maybe better identify the talent that's already in the big four or other firms, and provide them with mentorship, provide them with pathways, and communicate, you know, what does a career as a, what is the path to partner? What does that look like? And is it possible? And so they need to know that there's people that look like them in those roles. So maybe it's more of more leaders in those firms than discrimination, right? And I can't speak for everyone, because I myself have not worked in Big Four, but we do know that Big Four and other accounting firms regionally do a lot of recruiting at the university level. And when you are a first generation student, when you're a first generation student like I was, there's a sense of making your family proud. And there's a sense of, you know, I'm the first in the family to do this, and not just for Latinos, but others as well. But when you have an opportunity to work at a regional firm or work at a big four, there's a sense of, okay, I want to work at a big four for me to make my family proud. Like, this is a big brand name. And maybe there's another firm that's regional. It's the same CPA firm, but maybe doesn't have the same kind of
benefit. I'm not using the word benefits, but like, for example, if people want to learn about IT, they don't have the capability of providing that education.
Yeah, they may not. And so there's an opportunity for regional firms and some of the, you know, smaller local firms to also reach that talent pool at the university level. So it's just about maybe painting the picture of what that looks like. So yes, you could go to a larger firm and you will have that big name on your resume, but look, the path to partner looks like this at our firm. And we specialize in these types of services, and we have IT, or we do app integration consulting, or we do some of these kind of new types of advisory services, and you'll have a hands-on opportunity at our firm faster because of our speed, right? So So there's definitely some advantages and ways to position the value that your firm brings to that young talent.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.